Welcome to the Chromecast, the official podcast from Chrome Unboxed, where we unpack everything from hardware to software in the world of Chrome and Chrome OS, so that you can be more informed on all the latest updates, changes, and devices. This podcast is brought to you by NordVPN. We recommend this service and use NordVPN because they keep your browsing secure and private on any device. Whether you're using a Chromebook, an Android device, a Mac, an iPhone, or a Windows device, NordVPN is going to protect your browsing. They have 24/7 customer support in case you ever have any issues, and they offer a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to learn more and maybe give it a try, head over to chromeunbox.com/NordVPN to get started today. So there are some pretty exciting changes that we've made at Chrome Unboxed. Just in general, this is going to allow us to make more content, right? Just make more videos, more articles, and stuff like this. Yeah, the podcast.
It's a simple change, but it's a pretty big one for us as a group. In general, for a lot of people that don't know, most of us kind of held down at some point in time through this whole journey, have held down other jobs, full-time, part-time, all that kind of stuff, while we've tried to grow Chrome Unboxed. And as of April 1, Joe has stepped away. Gabe has been kind of full-time into Chrome Unboxed while doing some side work You've been doing that for 2 years now.
2 years, yeah, January.
And then I've moved back to a part-time position at the firm that Joe and I worked for in order to pursue more time with Chrome Unboxed. So just in general, we have a lot more time, a lot more mental energy, a lot more resources to give to this project now. And hopefully that means more awesome content for you guys, including things like a return to this weekly podcast. Yeah. Is that what we're going to do weekly?
Yeah. Why not?
We are now.
I said it out loud.
Robbie just spoke it into existence. Yeah. So that's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
So we're really excited. This is a big step for us. And like Robbie said, it just means more good content for you guys. But enough about us. Let's dig right into what has been happening in the world of Chrome and Chrome OS. So first up, we've got AMD Chromebooks that are on their way, and we've got this Zork. Is the processor code name?
Zork is the board name, yeah, the code name, okay, for the device. So
there we go.
Not sure if it's an actual production or development device, but yeah, January we saw AMD Chromebooks come into existence for the first time, but they were targeted squarely at the education market because they're kind of on the level with, you know, Apollo Lake, Gemini Lake kind of devices. So as awesome as it was to see, it was still kind of like, oh, okay, great, there they are. Well, now we've got some competitive processors headed to Chrome OS, and these are going to be, that's the Picasso line of AMD processors, but they have that Vega 8 and Vega 10 GPUs. So they're going to be comparable to a lower-end core processor from Intel, but the GPU is going to make the difference. These are going to be processors that developers and guys who do editing and eventually gamers are going to want to have in a Chromebook. So.
Yeah, because one of the huge differences here is AMD is cheaper just in mm-hmm. general across yeah. the board. So you're going to get the same type of performance you would get from, say, like the Y series, right? Core M,
yeah.
M3, maybe Y series, Core yeah. i5, something like that. But like you said, that GPU difference really... we haven't seen GPUs in any way, shape, or form in Chromebooks yet. And AMD has these APUs. They have GPUs built in. So mm-hmm. hopefully video editing, photo editing, you know, if we're talking about the normal productivity stuff, will just be better because of that and cheaper. So,
yeah. So they're going to do more and
for
they'll
less
be
money.
Right,
so,
right, I mean, right.
You imagine yeah. something like the ASUS C434 that just launched for $570. Imagine being able to swap that Core M3 for one of these AMD chips and right. the price going down $100
yeah.
and it actually being a little bit more productive of a machine.
Yeah, I mean, better graphics, those are, performance.
Yeah, I mean, that's just attractive across the board.
Absolutely.
So that's cool to see.
So when do we expect to maybe start seeing these devices? Do we have any idea as of right now?
I wouldn't anticipate any sooner than the end of the year, but you never know. I mean, Chromebook development has increased rapidly over the past 2 to 3 years, but this device is brand new. They just started working on it a couple of weeks ago, and you're usually on a new device, it's uncharted territory, 9 to 12 months.
Yeah, so the only way it can move quicker is if they're somehow able to just like swap in.
Right.
Now that they've already done some of the back work for AMD chips in general, if they can drop this into an Intel board and work out some kinks, I just don't know if that's even physically possible. Yeah. So hard to tell.
And these will be, you know, this will be a flagship device, oh, right? 100%. You know, this isn't, like you said, there were some of these other, you know, ARM processors that were out there that weren't quite flagship. They were education sector or whatever. You know, these
I don't want to call them cheap, but they're right. budget focused. They're education focused. They're just kind of those. They can do enough for right. basic stuff, but these are going to be way beyond that. We're going to see these in the 434s and the HP X360s, those kind of devices, I would think.
So. Yeah. So speaking of another Chromebook that is upcoming that we are very excited about is another made by Google device.
Yeah, yeah, we were super excited to see that happen. That was at the Cloud Next event. And that was a weird event in general. Those sessions were kind of closed. And so unless you were there, you didn't see it. It's not like they put them out in live streams or did press releases.
And it wasn't like these were super accessible either. They had a very high price tag, right?
Super expensive. What, $1,600 or $1,300?
Yeah, $1,500 for tickets.
Expensive.
Yeah. We did not go.
We weren't there. But someone from 9 to 5 was there. Who was on the ground? I don't remember
who it was. Might have been Ben. I'm not sure. But we were on the East Coast, actually. So we were in New York when that was going on, so.
And so we just saw it come across like everybody else did. But the exciting part is they just kind of hinted at it. And I want to read exactly what they said here. So from Google, they said, we want to help the employees that are constantly on the go and have a working paradigm where 60% of them, and this is all our Google employees, are working outside of their desks. 43% of them are working remotely at least part of the time. The tools they have aren't conducive to the lifestyle and work style that makes them maximally productive and excited to go to work every day. And here's the kicker. We think there's some unique things we can do differently than the Pixelbook and the Pixel Slate that are going to really help give them what they're looking for when they're working in this new modern cloud-first era. And they were specifically referencing something that was coming, a device that's coming from them. And they said, I can't find it in here, but they said basically they didn't have anything that they were going to announce, but to look in the future. They were pretty clear. Like, a made by Google Chrome-type cloud-centric device is coming that's going to differentiate itself from the Pixelbook and the Pixel Slate. And while I'm excited about that, I'm a little sad. I was really hoping they were just going to revamp the Pixelbook because I love my Pixelbook. And one with smaller bezels and just an updated processor, I mean, I would literally throw my money at it right now. But it doesn't seem like that's going to be it. I don't know what you do different than a tablet or a laptop. I have no idea. But
and we still don't really have any reason to believe that Atlas isn't a Google device. I'm just not sure at this point if that's the device they're talking about. Is it going to launch at I.O. next month because there's rumors of the new Pixel phone, the Pixel 3a phones coming? And it's kind of weird because, like, Cloud Next is a business-focused conference. It's not something that consumers really hear that much about, but Google really pushed it this year. There was a lot more forward-facing things in there and things on the front line, and I think I.O. is starting to get that way a little bit, too. There's rumors of new Nest products and rebranding and all that, so things are changing a lot. So,
yeah, and speaking of I.O., I mean, there's... I think, Robbie, you put out an article a couple days ago about all of these sessions that are geared, that are going to impact Chrome OS and Chromebooks.
So, yeah, it looks like there are 11 sessions total if you count the keynotes. So those are your main keynote and your developer keynote. You've got Stadia, streaming, and tech, a deep dive. That's not exactly just for Chromebooks, but Stadia obviously was demoed. And that's Google's game service, game streaming service. It was demoed on the Pixel Slate and the Pixel Book went on stage. So clearly it's going to impact Chrome users. But then you've got what's new with Chrome and the web, adapting Android games beyond the phone, beyond mobile, building Flutter apps for iOS, Android, Chrome OS, and web, Linux for Chromebooks, building apps for the Chrome OS ecosystem, Chrome OS accessibility, PWA is coming to desktop and Chrome OS, and a fireside chat with Hiroshi Lockheimer. And he's leaked out quite a few things about Android and Chromebooks.
Yeah, he likes to tease. But the cool thing is that compared to that to when we started this 3 years ago, right around the time Android apps on Chrome OS were officially announced, I think there were two Chrome OS sessions that year in 2016. and it's grown ever since. And up until this point, it's always been focused on developing Android apps for Chrome OS. Now it's everywhere. It's Chrome OS everything.
PWAs, just stuff for Chrome in general. So it does seem like we've said this for a while that Google has fully embraced Chrome OS.
Right.
It's almost like at one point, I think they were wavering a little bit with whether or not they were going to continue. They tried the Android app thing, and that didn't obviously even take root as fast as I think they wanted it to.
Yeah.
It took them longer to get this going, but I think with the Pixel Book, probably, that was the point where they went from putting their toe in the water to just going, you know what, let's go.
Yeah.
And I honestly believe that, in general, all these things, Android apps on Chromebooks, that's fine. Linux apps, that's fine. All of this has been a stopgap. Google wants to see the web move forward.
Right.
And in general, I think if Google just had everything they wanted from Chrome OS, it would be the web to a point where the web can deliver everything you need.
Right.
No apps needed. You just go to a URL and you click the install button and your PWA is installed. And so I think all these things are stopgaps because they know that they've got an architecture in Chrome OS that is future-proofed and really awesome for the web. And so they're building these things on to get them there. The web just needs a little bit more time.
Right.
It's so close, though, now.
And on top of that, because everyone wants to argue this OS, that OS, whatever, you know, and then there was Andromeda and then now there's Fuchsia and all that. It doesn't matter. The point is, as Robbie was saying, is it's all becoming web-centric, and Chrome OS is built around the Chrome browser, so why wouldn't it be one of the best options for this?
Right.
Microsoft has now adopted Chromium for their browser. Everyone's understanding that this is the direction that it's moving, so it's not about, oh, Chromebooks are the end-all, be-all. It doesn't matter, but it's the delivery method of choice for us.
and I.O. obviously is a very technical conference, and they really get down in the weeds on some of this stuff. But we're really excited about I.O. We'll be covering it, you know, full-fledged this year. So make sure to stay tuned for all of that. You know, we're going to be having a lot of coverage of I.O. Moving on here, we've got some changes over at YouTube TV. A really, really big announcement. I mean, this is really cool that they just continue to keep growing YouTube TV. But they have added the Discovery Group.
Second biggest announcement of the year. this has been the one thing that has kept me connected to cable, and is the TLC and the Food Network.
Mm-hmm.
And they've just adopted those. And that, for us, that's a big deal. And I know for a lot of people, it is a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, so the list technically is the big ones that are getting added: Discovery Channel, HGTV, Food Network, TLC, Investigation Discovery, never even heard of that, Animal Planet, Travel Channel, Motor Trend. So,
I mean, IDs, those
just that's little I've seen ID.
Mm-hmm. Everybody knows what that is.
Branding.
And I'll be honest with you, for me, like, most of these aren't a huge deal. HGTV, I know, is a big deal for a lot of households because watching home improvement shows is big money.
Yeah.
It's a big
yeah.
business. Lots of people like that stuff. But for me, I'm just excited to see Google adding this chunk of channels because it kind of rounds out. Once they added Turner,
right,
they have this. You have movie options if you want to add them. But now I feel like it's in a spot where you're not sitting and waiting for, oh, hopefully they're going to add XYZ, and then it's going to be full service.
Yeah.
Now, it did go up to $50. For me, that's a $15 increase because I was grandfathered in at $35.
Right.
So even when Turner channels came, I've been paying $35. So in May, when this goes into effect and all these channels show up, it goes up to $50. But I'm okay with paying.
I was going to say,
like, it is such a good deal, and I love YouTube TV as a service.
The convenience of it.
Yeah, let's not forget unlimited cloud DVR storage.
Six
watch
accounts.
It anywhere you want to go, and now they're nationwide. I don't think there's a market they don't exist in. So,
yeah, I mean, I can't tell you how convenient it is just to be able. My brother and I were working around the garage one day, and there was a game on TV, and we wanted to kind of watch it, kind of here and there while we were working on a couple things, and to be able to just cast it from my phone, you know, right there in the garage to the TV, boom, ready to go. It's just so convenient.
For a generation of people that have grown up knowing cable as this kind of box that lived in your living room,
it's
always confined to that space that you had to go to now know that that's in your pocket and it's anywhere. The shackles have just kind of come off, and I've gotten so used to that as a thing that when people don't have that ability, it's almost confounding to me that they're like, well, I guess I can't watch that. I'm like, Huh? Why not? You know, if you have a Chromecast and you don't have a Chromecast, go get one. They're right. dirt cheap, and it makes it easy to use this stuff. But yeah, I love it as a service. It's been fantastic, and that's not to knock like Hulu TV right. or yeah. But what PlayStation has one and Dude, Sling, yeah. and, but it's all kind of the general the same thing. It's just the way that I've used quite a few of them. The way that YouTube TV just the way it yeah. works. It's just so easy.
Yeah, because like we've installed our cable provider, we've installed their Stream app just so the kids can have it, and it's horrible. Like I can't even stand to use it. YouTube gets it.
Yeah,
the cable companies they're still not there.
Yeah, and they clearly can pull from all of their user data from YouTube and right. realize like, oh, here's how people watch stuff. Here's right. how people here's how to suggest it. Here's algorithms to do all this stuff and just throw all that crap into YouTube.
Google TV. Knows.
Yeah,
they know. And speaking of streaming video, and you said shackles coming off, and it was a perfect transition, Robbie. So the shackles have finally come off for Amazon and Google.
Yes. Finally.
Can I get a hallelujah?
Can I get an amen?
Can I get an amen?
So it's been a few months, 4 or 5 months, that Chromecast actually popped up on Amazon. So yeah. that was kind of the baby steps, and then... There was the back and forth with YouTube being on the Fire devices and the Echo show and all that, and then they got pulled, and then they were back, and then
right.
no one wanted to admit who was at fault, but it seems as though whatever the problem was, they've ironed their differences out.
Right, so. And it's clearly this was power play.
Oh, guaranteed.
This was Google saying, oh, you don't want to sell our Chromecast, and oh, you don't want to offer... you don't want to allow us to have castability in Prime Video.
Yeah.
Fine, we won't give you YouTube. And right. Amazon going, well, fine, you won't have castability. And fine, you won't, you know. And it's, you know, instead of fighting, like the consumers lost in all this.
Right,
like,
right.
They're the only ones losing.
Right. Honestly. And so the fact that they're ironing this out, like I'm excited for Fire TV and Fire Stick and Fire device users that. They're going to get their YouTube and YouTube TV and YouTube Kids, which is awesome because they're both great services.
Yes, YouTube's Kids.
They're going to have all those on all those devices, and that's great. Good for them. I don't have any of those devices.
Have you ever seen the Fire Stick?
I have.
I've never actually seen one.
It's fascinating.
I mean, then they're good. They're honestly, they're good streaming pieces of hardware.
Yeah.
They are. I have nothing really against them. I knew that YouTube use was always back and forth with them, and that was kind of annoying. And so I've just never bought into that. The more exciting part of all of this to me is the fact that I'll be able to go on Prime Videos on my Chromebook or on my phone and hit the dang cast button and put the video up on the screen. Like, there's a couple videos I've had to watch where, like, that was the only place I could find the content to catch up on, like, 2 episodes of something I'd missed. I couldn't find it anywhere else. And I had to, you know, put it on my phone and then mirror my phone's display and watch it lag and jump and the audio cut in it, like all that crap that goes on with that. And I'm just like, why in God's name can I not cast this to my Chromecast?
And people argue that there's other ways to do it. Our television has Amazon TV built into it or Amazon Prime built into it, and that's great. It's annoying to use.
Yeah, it's clunky.
I don't use it. It's clunky. Yeah, like you said. If I can't flip it up on my phone or my Chromebook and cast it to my TV, I'm not going to watch it.
Well, and like you guys, like you guys said, I mean, the consumer was the one losing here. I mean, myself included, and I think all of us have Prime memberships,
years.
You know, we've got the content sitting there. And there's some great shows on there. There's some great content.
Jack Ryan.
Yeah,
I'm gonna be watching some Jack Ryan.
Yeah, there's lots of great content, and it just wasn't accessible. In a way that was convenient for us. So, yeah, really excited about that. That's cool stuff. Speaking of kind of... Man, there's, like, this trend of, like, these... You know, we've got Amazon kind of breaking down some of these barriers, and now we've got Microsoft introducing, you know... Well, I guess Google adding the ability to edit Microsoft Docs.
Right.
You know, that's something that you wrote about, Robbie, weeks ago, maybe. Talk to us a little bit about that. What does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, just in general, Google has always had a compatibility layer that worked. It was almost like a plug-in kind of deal.
Yeah, it's built into Chrome. It's technically an extension, but it's hidden.
They kind of baked it in years ago. And you notice it if you go to open a Microsoft document. It opens, you see that little animation, and you get a very limited menu. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you go to change something, it's like, hey, you can't save this. And, hell, you can't share this. And, you can't collaborate with this. If you'd like to save it as a Google document of some sort, whether it's a sheet or a document or whatever, now you can edit, now you can share, now you can collaborate and all that stuff that you want to do. That's going away. So the ability to natively edit Microsoft Office documents is coming in the coming months, whatever that means. And when it arrives, basically the idea is, and they listed off a ton of file types. It's all mm-hmm. the ones that most people are going to use. I mean, PowerPoint, XLS, Doc, DocX, all that kind of stuff. You'll just be able to open it up, start editing it, and share it with whoever. And if you work with clients, if you deal with any of that kind of stuff, you know the pain point that is a client sending you a Microsoft Office or a Word document. Can you make some edits? And you go to make edits, and your whole office works in G Suite. So you, sure, I'll make some edits. You open it. Well, now you got to save it as another document. But you can't share that document back with the client because they don't know what to do with that, because some people just don't understand cloud computing. And so now you've got to save it or download it back as another document. It feels like taking a 10-year step backwards mm-hmm. to work on a document. And now it's like, okay, cool. I'll open up this .doc file. Make my edits. We can put notes in. I can send the share link to the person. They can get online, and we can edit things in the cloud, and we can stop downloading and sending files and emails like, you know, cavemen.
Could just fax it.
Yeah, good. That's what it feels like, yeah. though. I mean, it feels such like you're just backwards.
I prefer all of carrier that. Pigeons. Yeah.
Gosh, the cool thing it's is, all going is away. Yeah, I mean, there's no official word on it, but clearly Microsoft and Google have had to have worked Absolutely. Together on this. I mean, yeah. Google's not just going to run with their stuff, but it's good to see that there's some unification going on yeah. in the yeah, industry
it,
here.
It works to Microsoft's favor to do this.
Absolutely.
I mean, people are doing what I just described anyway. So, right. you know what? The minute you have this available, if I'm working on a Windows device and I'm a Chrome browser person and we use G Suite, well, now I feel like, well, I like editing in Microsoft Word because there's two or three things I like about it that it does better right. than Docs. Well, I can keep doing that now. I can stay in that ecosystem. I don't have to leave it. And because there's been people leaving that ecosystem. It's like, you know, it's not worth all of that. I'll figure out how to do my thing in Docs and leave Microsoft behind. So right. this is going to serve Microsoft well, too. And again, it's Apple Music showing up and working on Chromebooks now. It's Apple Music deciding to put, you know, Chromecast ability in their apps. Like, all these walled gardens over the last few weeks are yeah. starting to crumble a little bit, and it's fantastic to see, because at the end, users need to be able to use the services they want on the hardware they want and let everything else get out of the way. And that's right. kind of the promise of the web in general. It's why exactly. I'm such a huge fan of the open web and not applications or ecosystems, that the stuff's on the internet and it's democratic. Like, I just want to use that service on this device because I like this device better. You like your Mac, I like my Chromebook. Cool. Right, we should be able to use the same stuff.
Yeah, and side note, I mean, not to Google fanboy here, because they have their negatives like anybody, but at Cloud Next, that was one of the major announcements, was Google Cloud Platform is now going to support all of these other platforms, so people won't have to go outside of their own company's ecosystem to make things work. Everything will just work together. Google is pushing for the open web
yep.
and for just a platform of cloud computing where everything just works. Mm-hmm. And that benefits everyone.
Yep.
All right, guys. So before we wrap up here, let's talk about some of the devices we're tracking.
Yeah, we'll start with Hatch. It is the newest Chromium repository device that we're tracking. So if you're listening to this and you're not completely familiar with what I'm talking about, we track devices and we dig through the open source repositories where all the code commits are being done for new devices. It takes a long time and it's tedious mm-hmm. work, but we find all kinds of fun stuff. And in general, this the way that Hatch is kind of unfolding. Gabe found the initial thing for Hatch 6 months ago.
Oh, wow. Something like that.
It's been a while. And so Hatch has been around for a little while. Yeah, it looks like, yeah, November, back in November. And yeah. so Hatch has been around as a board for a little while. And this happens. We'll find a board, and we'll see nothing about it for mm-hmm. a while.
Right.
And all of a sudden, all these details, as the development process right.
Especially
goes,
because of this
up.
One, it's built off of Comet Lake, which in November, Comet Lake processors weren't even available publicly,
right.
I don't think.
Right.
So this is 9th gen mm-hmm. or 8th and a half gen. Intel doesn't even know what generation it is. It's the next generation right. of core processors.
So. Yeah, so we're talking the latest processors. Hatch is getting a fingerprint scanner, 2400 by 1600 display, so a Pixelbook style display. Yeah, I don't want to say it's the same thing. Yeah, I can't call that. Stowable stylus, so digitizer stylus that's going to go inside the device, which I love. I think it's an awesome thing to have in a Chromebook. It's also getting this new feature that some Windows devices have, and it may just be a Comet-like thing. So for Chromebooks, it's going to be the first processor where they're saying, hey, we're going to turn this thing on. But it allows daisy chaining, basically, of displays. So if you hook your Chromebook into a display that supports daisy chaining, that display then can have an output to another display, which can have an output to another display. Instead of having to hook the Chromebook to every display individually, you can daisy chain them. It's cleaner on a desktop setup, but it also allows you to do some stuff for kiosk setups where you have nine monitors.
Big for enterprise, definitely. Yeah.
So lots of high-end stuff going on here, obviously. So we're talking, you know, the latest gen processors and all that kind of stuff, and high-res displays, fingerprint scanners. Put all that stuff together. Seems pretty likely this is going to be high-end Chromebook. Yeah,
this thing's going to be a beast.
Yeah. So, but we're going to keep digging and see what other new fun stuff we can find with it.
There's more.
Yeah. So, if you want to talk about the HP, the new HP.
Oh, device. Yeah, the new HP. So, this was kind of their return serve to Acer, I guess. Acer announced their 714, 715 last week, which are enterprise-focused, kind of have the aesthetic of the Spin and the new 514. But they're solid. They're good enterprise devices. First Chromebook ever with a numeric keypad and a fingerprint scanner. Well, yesterday HP debuted their 15, and it's their first 15.6 inch device, which is really cool to see people going into that realm, because I know it's a want and a need for a lot of people. But it has a numeric keypad, the kind of that ceramic finish lid like the X360 has, the X360 14, and then a couple different options for the key deck. But it's going to start out with a Pentium Gold processor, $450. So it should be it should be competitive in that space, and it looks good. If it has near the build quality of the X360, it should be a really popular device.
Yeah, I mean, HP, their better devices have had a really good build on them, so I would expect it to be put together pretty well. Another one that we're tracking is a new MediaTek device. This one's early on.
Yeah, really
codename
early.
Crane. But there's also... there are two MediaTek devices too that were Kui,
if you're a Pokemon fan, you can probably pronounce it. They're all named after professors from Pokemon. The cool thing about these devices is that this is the kind of the next generation MediaTek processor. I'm not sure if it was made just for Chromebooks, because you can't find it on MediaTek's site anywhere.
And it's not in anything.
Yeah, it is a octa-core processor as opposed to their last one that you find in like the Lenovo Flex 11 C330, it was a quad core.
Right.
So this has jumped the ROC chip that's in the Samsung.
Yeah, quite a bit. I mean, we've tried to run some benchmarks. I think like Snapdragon 821 with the multi-core. So what was in the original Pixel phone? So that's a massive step over any ARM chip that's currently in. Right. But you know, we're not tracking anything other than Cheza, which we've been talking about for months and months. On the Snapdragon 845 front, but know that in the second half of this year, we're fully expecting to see not just one, but multiple Snapdragon 845 powered Chromebooks coming to market. So once that happens, even probably the latest MediaTek processors won't really hold a candle to those. It's going to be an interesting beast when those things
show up. If MediaTek, whoever's making these, can get them, you know, perfected and on shelves sooner than later, then they'll do okay. But yeah, once Cheza and the newer Qualcomm chip comes out in a Chromebook, they're going to kind of squash the ARM side of things. You know, so
on that, so I mean, you're talking 14 to 16 hours battery, great performance, super thin form factors, LTE built in,
all that.
There's going to be some great stuff coming when those start showing up in the market, and we know for sure that's coming later this year, and that's going to be exciting.
Yeah, and you know, we're really excited about these upcoming devices. You know, there's just so much going on in the world of Chrome and Chrome OS, so if you want to keep track of all this, head over to chromeunbox.com. You know, that's where we're going to be posting all of this content, so you all can follow along there. One thing we're kind of doing now, rather than talking about deals on the podcast, because those are just so constantly changing, we've got a deal section on the website now. You can go up there, click on deals, and see kind of the ongoing deals that are out there. Hey guys, thanks for tuning in. You can find show notes over at chromeunbox.com/podcasts, along with
all the info that we've covered in this episode. Additionally, you can find us online on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook by searching at Chrome Unboxed. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.